Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Duet and the Kaiser Quartet. It's good to see all of your half of your faces again. So I thought of the victory psalm that Reese, oh, by the way, speaking of changes, is Reese a foot taller? Wow. When I read the victory psalm that he read, I thought about COVID and being on the way to victory. And I'm glad Paul could be so happy, as expressed in this part of his letter to the Corinthians. So that's part of where my happiness is today. I'm not going to try to interpret the first verses in that, being with the body and away from the body. And I went all over on the internet trying to find a decent interpretation of that, and it seemed like nobody agrees. So I'm going to leave that for you to figure out. Even Paul had different ideas on resurrection. Sometimes he seems to think that our own resurrection occurs immediately upon death. Other times, waiting for the second coming. And we know Paul was wrong about the time frame of the, quote, second coming. He thought it was going to occur during his lifetime. And here we are 2,000 years later, and the usual interpretation of second coming hasn't occurred yet. But since Paul was only speculating about some things, where can I? What if the second coming actually referred to Jesus bestowing his spirit upon his followers at Pentecost? Related to that, what if his second coming was what happens to us when we join Jesus' movement? Or possibly we could think of second coming among the great leaders and followers like Martin Luther King, Teresa of Avila, John Lewis, maybe even non-Christians like Gandhi. So regarding verse 16, from now on, therefore, we regard no one from a human point of view, even though we once knew Christ from a human point of view, we know him no longer in that way. I struggled with that one all week. I'm not sure what Paul means about not knowing Christ from a human point of view and not from a human point of view. And then the the last part of the verse, maybe you can help me with your interpretation of that during summer, during our sharing time, since it's very familiar, the verse. So verse 16, and he died for all so that those who live for themselves so that those who live for themselves, but for him who died and was raised for them. I'm guessing that that means that when we join in Jesus' mission that he laid out in his inaugural address in Luke 4:18-19, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, and let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. The first line of Jesus' inaugural is bringing good news to the poor. Small ball, maybe our volunteering at the Cathedral Center and Friedens, is of many participation in bringing good news to the poor. You who have participated in that have probably received loving gratitude from the receivers of your efforts. But I'm guessing Jesus may have been referring to something much bigger. Last week, Chris educated us on the demonic system of capitalism and how we wittingly and unwittingly participate in it. I'm guessing that good news to the poor would be the institution of a system of economic justice where the poor become able to share more equally in the bounty of the earth's resources and power among peoples. Again, during sharing time, maybe you have ideas on how we might more meaningfully participate in such a grand revolution, resulting in the last line, the proclamation of the year of the Lord's favor, where debts are forgiven and the oppressed truly go free. During sharing time, maybe someone can help me understand what the second sentence in the verse means. We no longer view Christ from a human point of view. Now to verse 17. So if anyone is in Christ, there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new. Sorry, but the syntax confuses me a bit. Might if anyone who is in Christ mean for anyone who is in Christ, there is a new creation? That's the only way the sentence really makes sense to me, so I'm going to go with that. I'm guessing that, quote, in Christ, unquote, means anyone who has immersed themselves in the Jesus movement. Paul universally applies this proclamation to, quote, anyone who is in Christ. He asserts that everything old has passed away and everything has become new. I like the little exercise that Rebecca did with the kids on what do you see that's old and what do you see that's new. Here Paul's saying everything is new. But Paul's experience may not be your experience. In fact, it is a stark contrast to my own and maybe yours. I was born and raised to parents whose whole life outside of their unskilled labor seemed to revolve around the church. A rural Mennonite congregation near Whiskey Hill, Oregon. Which was a part of the Pacific Coast Conference, which of course was part of the larger Mennonite church. Following Jesus' discipleship was a part of every sermon, every children's story, Sunday school, in which loving your neighbor and loving your enemy was a constant theme. To me as a child, it meant no toy guns, no playing cops and robbers at school, no playing cowboys and Indians, etc. My ancestors had been a part of this Anabaptist tradition since the Reformation. And that includes some of Matthew and Steve's ancestors. I don't know if you all know that we're cousins. We didn't know that until we hooked up together here. Thus, it makes sense that Paul might declare for himself that in Christ there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new. But he doesn't speak only for himself, but for anyone who is in Christ. So it seems to me that the experience of Paul declaring that all things have become new may have been true for him. Well, that wasn't my experience. When I decided to become a Christian and be baptized, it was more of a public declaration that I wanted to continue in the tradition of my parents and ancestors. The day before this declaration and the day after were no different. I milked the cows, ate breakfast, went to seventh grade at Whiskey Hill Elementary. On Friday, was baptized on Sunday, and still had to milk the cows on Monday, et cetera, et cetera. Same teacher, same subjects at school, same classmates. Ike was president on Friday, still president on Monday. Cold War hadn't gone away. Khrushchev was still in power in the Soviet Union. The Suez Canal crisis continued. Old things didn't pass away, and all things had not become new. Whether Paul was referring to individual experience or to the cosmos, nothing seemed new. Notice that his declaration is in passive voice and in the past perfect tense, as if it had already happened, really. The Roman Empire continued to subjugate and oppress its subjects, including the occupation of Palestine and the persecution of Christians. The rich continued with debtor enslavement, etc. So I guess maybe Paul was contrasting life outside the church community to life inside the church family. That I can relate to in my imagination. What it must have been like to live in a world of selfishness and personal estrangement, in contrast to being part of what Martin Luther King referred to as the beloved community. Committed to joining with Jesus pursuit of his mission, which begins, "I am come to bring good news to the poor." and ends with the proclamation of economic justice. He begins his inaugural with the goal of economic justice and ends with the goal achieved. And there's some other things in the middle, but the beginning of it and the end refer to economic justice for the poor. It's been 2,000 years. The bad news, it hasn't been achieved. The good news, we have the opportunity to participate in the same pursuit of that same goal. When I take my eyes off the goal, I get depressed with the reality of our world of injustice. When I keep my eyes on the prize, I have hope. Just as I was writing this, Reverend William Barber, leader of the Poor People's Campaign, was inviting people to participate in a rally for the poor this week. People like him give me hope. Teachers, preachers, healers in our congregation give me hope. Christian peacemakers like Sarah and Wendy give me hope. Young activists like Amanda Gorman, Greta Thunberg, Emma Gonzalez, David Hogg, give me hope. And the Goshen College Chamber Choir singing "My Soul Cries Out That the World Is About to Turn" gives me hope. If you want to turn to number 412 in Voices Together, we'll listen to them sing that right now.
The day you bring, let the fire exhaust your justice burn. draws near.